I'll attempt to go through a brief briefing before Pascal's class, which you all really came here to see on, the fight of Abraham Lincoln and what exactly we can learn from today's fight that Lincoln brought to the fore. The briefing I'm going to begin tonight, I figured what would be best would be to go through or to present a brief presentation that LaRouche gave about two minutes, which has been circulating all across the internet several days ago. And this happened 10 days after his last webcast on August the 1st, where he put forth a very important call to battle for anybody, both in political positions and citizens alike, to rise to the occasion now that we have a crisis the likes of which we've never seen before in history hit society on all parts of the globe, not just one part, but all parts of the globe. And we'll follow that up with another video that I think will illustrate some of the points he brings up.
What happened this past...
Oh, that's not on.
Last weekend reminds historians of June and July of the French Revolution 1789. This was a time in which the king and his wife were running into hiding and had called in troops of foreign governments to conduct a siege around Paris. At the same time, the Duke of Orleans had organized a siege of the Bastille. So during this period, none of the responsibles for political government of France, the king and the parliament and other institutions, were on the scene. The situation this past weekend, from Friday through the end of Sunday, was a copy of that. We're in a situation where the President of the United States is fleeing from any direct confrontation with the opinions of the people of the United States. The members of the Congress in sight were largely in the same kind of incompetent posture. In other words, we're in a situation where the power of government, of self-government, of the United States has been destroyed by the actions of this President and his dupes of the U.S. Congress. If this doesn't frighten you, there's something wrong with you. And in this period, what I must do is react accordingly. I must give some kind of sense of leadership and direction to the nation, because I know that the presidential powers are not functioning properly, and the Congress is not functioning. So who is functioning? This is a crisis like that of the French Revolution, in which in a vacuum created by the absence of competence from the executive, only panic and stupidity from the executive, and the lack of competence from the other government, elements of government, has created a vacuum which can lead to the most terrible consequences.
So we have what LaRouche has just illustrated there, a striking French revolutionary period or danger inside of the United States right now. Now, a lot of people don't necessarily know their history, since the French Revolution in many parts of France even are still celebrated even as a national holiday today. Bastille Day, right? It's like the 14th of July. But when you actually look at what this means, you realize that there were two revolutions in this period. You had an American Revolution, and you had, several years later, a French. Both of them were originally spawned from the same idea, principled idea, that oligarchies, aristocracies, right to rule, king's right of power, were obsolete principles in society. And thus the new form would be one where the will of the people, of the self-governed, who select from amongst themselves a leader, was going to be the new form. The powers that worked, or the conspiracy within the French nation, Lafayette, Bailly, and others, who were instrumental in the success of the American Revolution, did not, when push came to shove, deal adequately with the crisis, the fear inside of the French population. And you had a British policy which not only destroyed the ability for the French to eat, to have a living, to support their families, or to do anything else, but a crackdown in the form of a police state where you had orders go out by certain British agents like Philippe Egalite, who LaRouche mentioned in the presentation, and others, Robespierre and so forth, to begin shooting citizens who were all protesting around the Bastille. And this created general chaos where those who did have the competence to lead at that point were no longer able to keep control of the situation. And we had general anarchy break out, and a lot of people lost their heads. Now, this isn't something to lose our heads over. But we do have to be aware that the same general mob tendency is present all across the United States and the world as we speak in what's called the mass strike phenomenon. One video I was going to show briefly right now will give you guys a certain taste of this. This was happening, I believe, at the town hall meeting of Ben Cardin, I believe, several days ago.
Democrats and Republicans were met with an infuriating revolt amongst the...
Okay. Now, what we just saw there is happening all over the United States. That was one town hall meeting of one representative that went back to his constituency after supporting Obama's health care reform and was what you saw on the verge of getting lynched. Now, you can go to YouTube and actually watch dozens and dozens of other different states and different town hall meetings of a similar, even more intense nature happening all over the place. And people now, as LaRouche warned in his August 1st webcast, before any of this had actually broken forth, are ready to lynch their representatives, who they see in a time of great crisis where they're losing their jobs and they're losing everything, are only accelerating the attack on their family. They're actually putting forth policies like Obama's health care reform bill that will kill their loved ones, all on the pretext of saving money to continue Wall Street's bailouts. Now, you have a very intense bit of sophistry in Montreal, for example. Our media hasn't really covered this very much. We're in one of the most isolated bubbles, I think, in terms of media control over the perceptions of your average Montrealer than you have anywhere else in the world. Now, the thing about this quality of perception is that it's something which may align to how the universe actually works, how the reality exists, or can be induced through lies or popular opinion. Usually they go hand in hand, to warp the imagination of the people, of the masses, to think in a different term than how the universe actually functions. So you got these two opposing things. The way things are and the way people think they are. Now, this gets more complicated when we're dealing with what we have in our society today, especially what's occurred over the last decades since becoming a consumer society, is that the soft-mindedness of our population has been played like a violin. Now, if you tell somebody that, you know, a straight-up lie, they could pretty much tell whether it's true or not. Like, that chair is an elephant. You know? If I'm telling you a lie that's based on your senses, no, it's a chair, right? But the way the mind functions is that it sees through reason. So that if I can give a false reason for why something happens as a process, and if you're or anybody around you is not strong-minded enough to actually think through, is that true, or could I think more deeply about it? But if they just settle with whatever I give them, then we have a problem in our society. Like, you could think of an example of I was thinking about this earlier, maybe a house catching on fire, and if I'm asking, well, where's that smell coming from? It smells like something's burning, and somebody can tell me, well, you know, that's, it's like the new fragrance of carpets. It's like a new, what do you call it? Incense. And if I just say, oh, okay, I'm on the second floor and it smells like incense, burning wood, whatever, okay. And then somebody else asks me, like, hey, what's that smell? And I say, oh, it's incense, the new thing on the market. Everybody's doing it. It smells great, right? I'm like, oh, yeah, okay, I guess so. But at a certain point, the fire is still a fire. It's not incense. And you're still in a house, and your family's there. So the thing about reality is that it asserts itself from time to time, where a lie can only perpetuate itself so long. And when people begin to realize that, oh, there's flames, it's hurt, it's hot, it's bigger than I thought, you don't want them to act out of fear. Because if they don't really know what's going on, if there's no leadership to direct people out of the house and into safety, then you're going to have more chaos than anything else. It won't end well. And that, up until now, is generally what the media has been servicing in convincing people that, you know, the real economic crisis is based on subprime mortgages, or it's based on, you know, immigrants getting mortgages they can't afford, and, you know, otherwise, or Lehman, one of the, you know, Bear Stearns or Lehman Brothers went bankrupt, and that's what caused the collapse. And so you have this just insinuated again and again in all parts of the media around the world, and people who are living in a world where they've witnessed their industries taken down, our productivity of food being destroyed, and other things. And I mean, the increasing destruction of other nations that used to have an optimistic outlook towards development in the times of the 60s, like those in Africa, South America, and others. Asia, we've watched them become more indebted, more impoverished, and more desperate year to year, to the point that people should know better. They have the ability to know whether these lies coming at them are true or not, but they're settling with the answer, with the quick reason given from whatever is accepted as the media story. But now, as you see, people are feeling the pain right now, and so we have to make sure that we take advantage of this before the mobs get so unruly that you do have what LaRouche calls the next French Revolution, where what arose next was a Napoleon and not a constitutional convention. There's no Lincolns in France. Now, Pelosi is serving as a very interesting Antoinette right now, where the way she's dealing with it is just extraordinary. I mean, it's really amazing, because here you got a person who has been sabotaging everything good from LaRouche's Homeowners and Bank Protection Act. Any bill that reflects non-fascism, she has been adamantly attacking, which is not the best way to make friends with the citizens of the world. Now, she came out writing an op-ed with Steny Hoyer, who's another one of these Wall Street prostitutes, basically calling anybody who, anyone who basically goes against Obama's health plan is un-American. And here's a woman who just yesterday, all right, un-American, and this is published in the Washington Post, but just yesterday, she hosted a multi-billion dollar, or a huge event, a gala at her Napa Valley vineyard, right, in California, bring together all of the billionaires from the Rockefellers to the Gettys to everybody who she praises so much as being real Americans, you know? And you've got the media covering this, the population's looking at her both calling them un-American because they're seeing a policy that's going to kill their grandparents, and seeing this woman sitting in her mansion in a vineyard having a celebration with a bunch of billionaires while they're seeing their lives being drained away. So these people are starving. This is what it's coming down to now.
She's playing with fire.
Very much so. And she should worry about herself being eaten, if not for the fact that maybe she's made of so much plastic and staples at this point from so many surgeries that people wouldn't eat her, wouldn't touch her. So this is getting stupid. You have Orzag desperately now reacting to these types of attacks from the population on the bill, saying that anybody who is a member of Congress who comes out with an opposing or an alternative health care reform bill, not Obama's, that doesn't include legislation like IMAC, which is this is the famous death board of experts that you may have heard about. But IMAC, which is the international or the medical the agency, it's a commission, basically. It's like what he calls MedPAC on steroids, where you have the expert board of advisors of 5 or 6 scientists, selected, not elected, from people around the president to decide outside of the control of Congress who, based upon cost-effectiveness research, which is just putting a dollar value on a human life, who will be getting this treatment or medication and who will just have to take a painkiller, as Obama has said profusely on TV. Based upon the fact that we got to save money, and now's the time where, you know, our wallet's running dry, you know, the economy is out of finance, we have to save dough. So okay, you have MedPAC, or this IMAC thing, that Obama's, Orzag is saying he will destroy, he will not allow anything of this sort that doesn't include that legislation to pass. And people, what he's doing is he's directly not just attacking LaRouche, who has proposed an alternative policy through the Hill-Burton reform, but people like John Conyers, who, if you go to John Conyers' website, who's also a Democrat, has put forth a bill legislating for a new health care reform of universal coverage, but not to save $3 trillion or what have you, or to create an expert board of Nazi-like advisors and experts to determine who lives and who has lives that shouldn't be worth living. But he's actually saying, you know, we need a principled a relatively competent healthcare system. And so these are the types of attacks that Orzag is waging. And Obama, meanwhile, has come out saying that anybody, because, you know, we've got all these crazy accusations that we're trying to euthanize the old and, you know, determining lives not worthy of life, crazy. But if you hear anything like that, citizen, then dial into this number or send an email to this website to snoop on your neighbor. Because we have to get to the bottom of where these things are coming from. Yeah. So you got a snitch. You got a snitch policy here, where the government's actually encouraging the population to snitch on each other to see where these rumors are coming from. Who's stirring this stuff up? And we haven't seen anything like this since maybe, you know, McCarthyism or Hitler.
Hitler's time.
There you go. Huh. Now. Interesting too. The other media outlets that have been serving as longtime financial prostitutes to get across this propaganda of the Wall Street British line of what's going on have also been on overdrive, and it's getting kind of hilarious too, because these guys are they're trying desperately to redeem people like these behaviorists like Ezekiel Emanuel and others around Obama, who we've exposed profusely on videos, everywhere online, as being the agencies behind these euthanasia policies, which is what they are. You're rationing healthcare to determine who gets to die. And the Financial Times came out, first it was the Times, 2 days ago, came out with the defense of Ezekiel Emanuel, It was called Obama's Deadly Doctor Strikes Back. Now, the article essentially says, you know, there's crazy rumors about a death panel that's being pushed, but there's no such thing as a death panel. Just a panel of experts that will save hundreds of billions of dollars by discouraging doctors from giving unnecessary tests and procedures. That's all. Not a death panel. Such words. He also had another one from the Financial Times that was in reference to all of these town hall protesters around America, saying that some of their fears are laughable, but many of those Medicare outlays go to end-of-life treatments as doubtful benefits, looking harder at the value of those treatments, which is on the agenda and should be on the agenda. Calling this a plan for euthanasia is ludicrous, but the underlying issues need to be talked about. And then the article goes on saying, the protesters carry posters of politicians with devil horns, or Obama with a Hitler mustache. Of course, the notion that the Obama administration plans euthanasia for sick retirees is insane. Can anyone seriously believe this? Right? But, it goes on. If stricter tests of cost-effectiveness in healthcare for the elderly are brought to bear, as they should be, spending unlimited sums on one or two low-quality end-of-life years will likely fail them. In systems like Britain's, it is standard operating procedure. If Obama does not get a handle on the situation, it's hard to see how you can get from here to any type of consensus. So if anybody...
What paper was that?
That was the Financial Times.
Great medical journal.
Yeah. So there you go, you know. It's preposterous, but, you know, spending money on old people, just for a couple of end of life years that they probably won't even enjoy. Why would we do that?
Come and see what's going on. Great Britain.
Yeah.
Beautiful Britain.
Yeah. But there is a certain reality that thing is breaking up, and that the author of that article did point out that if Obama doesn't get a handle on the situation, it won't be possible to have a consensus. And that's the thing defining the Obama administration up until today has been the healthcare reform bill. And that's his usefulness, is implementing a legalized policy of where the government doesn't become the defender of the rights of citizens, but the implementer of the debt.
But
yes.
Isn't it interesting they're worried about this idea of consensus, that we have to get consensus on this?
Popular opinion, yeah. That's what truth is. It's if you can get everyone to nod their heads at the same time, you've got truth. So if you can't get that because people are more bloodthirsty about saving their grandparents and, you know, cerebral palsy children, that they're willing to lynch mob people like their elected representatives, then you're not going to get a consensus. And Obama's usefulness becomes nil, which is where, again, just this morning, our movement has begun to focus now on a new threat, which being successful in one battle doesn't mean you've won the war. You just simply have more dangers and more things to consider now. So we've done a pretty successful job up until this point on this Nazi reform bill. But Obama now is in a situation where his life is much more in jeopardy than ever before. Because we know that the intention here is not any, you know, it's not some superficial money-making profit or, you know, motive. But you have the intention, the highest of intentions governing the processes is to destroy the United States of America, the Constitution, the Declaration of Independence, and the memory of what a sovereign nation state is from the face of the earth. And that's really what we're witnessing. The methods by which empires achieve these ends has always been the same thing. It's chaos. Create absolute chaos and hope to come out and pick up the pieces at the end of the day. So we have to be very careful now at this point that we do keep a handle on the situation, and that Obama's life isn't taken by one of the many people who he's given a reason, sadly, to end it. You even had all of the newspapers covering a recent Rush Limbaugh following Republican fellow who was at one of Obama's town hall meetings carrying a a giant gun on his leg, and things are getting dangerous. That the Brits are willing to kill this guy to create general chaos. So this is where we have to get a certain sense that this is all being driven by a misunderstanding, a misperception inherent in our current stage of society of what is economy. Because none of the things that LaRouche is saying as a solution will be understood if people are thinking the way Mark Carney of the Bank of Canada or Ben Bernanke are thinking, which is economics is finance. Economics is money. Okay? Because as long as you think that way, and as long as we allow people to continue to have these ideas in society, society is doomed. These ideas have to be not just shed from ourselves, because we were born into a society that's just encouraged. Money makes the world go around, you know? It's there from day one. But if we don't shed them within ourselves, but also attack them, when we see this being conveyed in others, then you will witness the collapse of civilization. And so, economics is not finance. It's not money. Right? Economics, as what LaRouche has laid out very importantly, is physical. It's people. And in the August 1st webcast that I'd mentioned already, LaRouche put forth the newest version of his groundbreaking triple curve, which I think most of you have heard about. I'll show this very quickly on the screen as an animation, but we should all really... We can't know this enough, right? This is a very... He put this forth originally in 1995 in a Vatican conference. He brought it forth again in 2001 when it hit a new stage. Now, again, because of the events since July of 2007 when the global system collapsed under the famous subprime crisis, what we've witnessed is a new, new bizarre phase. And I'll just show that very quickly here as an animation. And this could always be known more and more deeply. I'll play this once. All right. The two top lines are the money. The bottom one is the physics. It's the physical world. Okay. Anybody want to see that again?
Well, can you just explain?
Yep. So, this is essentially the rate of change, both for the positive and for the negative, that's occurred since around 1968, around the period where our economy shifted from the Bretton Woods system that Roosevelt set in motion, which was a physical economy fundamentally, where money, if you were an investor, you were investing in something that was actually creating something real, right? It wasn't a gambling system at that point, but you had a basis of productivity, of reality, human beings. And that was destroyed around 1971. That's when we became a consumer society. Now, this was illustrated by LaRouche to get the first most necessary grasp of what physical economics is and what is his authority to say that this is a global economic breakdown crisis, not a recession, not a depression, a global economic breakdown crisis. It's not isolated to one nation, but to all nations. So here we have the monetary, what we see in terms of the money in circulation. The red, the financial aggregates, are those things which, those derivative contracts, other speculative contracts which can be created that could be said to justify the money. The blue is what you live in. It's what keeps you alive when you turn on the water, turn on the light, and drive down a road, not fall off a bridge. Right. So you have a certain necessity of investment implicit in upkeeping your physical economy, and this is where all of these things should be together as a one. So if the blue goes up in a healthy society, it's because you have, or if these go up, the money goes up from one year to the next, it's because you have an upgrade in the quality of life, productivity, or other things that your society needs to survive. Meaning you need a future orientation. In 2001, this period here, you've had a crossover. This is where LaRouche unveiled his second triple curve. The third one here today is 2007, and what we've seen is complete destruction, where what we know of today is toxic waste, right? What the media calls toxic waste is being the thing that all of our banks are holding on to, and that the government has to buy out, as our Bank of Canada has been doing profusely, is what we've seen disintegrate. So this whole thing is being held together by perception, by a lie. The lie is that somehow all of this money that you see that's just been increased by creating Greenspan, by using Greenspan's creative financial instruments, you know, just finding different ways of gambling on the weather, of creating a new contract for, I mean, it's horse racing, essentially. That's the principle. But these things have inflated to such a point now that the game is up. You can't keep a Ponzi scheme going forever. That's the nature of the Ponzi scheme, is that they break. Right? So there's a certain physics to this. Now, we're at the stage here where, come October, we're facing a serious shutdown, where there are these certain moments. Not every single second matters equally, but there's these certain discrete moments in a continuous process, like what we've seen here. This whole thing is a continuous process. But there's certain moments, like that one here in 2001 when things crossed over, like that thing in 2007 when people realized that the game is up with the subprimes, or like October, the first week, where we have what's known as the end of the fiscal year. And the first week of October, to give you guys a certain sense of this, this is when all banks have to open up their books. It's tradition, they do it every year. Every single dollar spent of the $24+ trillion of bailouts, complete government printed, backed with nothing money that we've seen in the last period, began in October 3rd, 2008. That was the first $700 billion bailout, which some of you may remember. Every single thing since then has been in the last 12 months. So the simple reality of having the books expose their assets and having them revealed to be just unpayable zillion-dollar IOUs that were created out of thin air is enough to set up forth a serious chain reaction. It may happen sooner. I mean, this isn't something that you could say is, you know, your crystal ball says, you know, October 7th.
George Soros did.
Maybe George Soros has his tea leaf reader, I don't know. But this is something knowable. And so the solution is clear. We need, if we're going to get out of this with our skin, and we need the new Bretton Woods Monetary Conference, the four nations, Russia, China, and India. We need the other legislation that LaRouche put forth. And to give you also a sense, just quickly, the reason this is global, this is a global mass strike phenomenon. It's not isolated to America. It's not a U.S. collapse. As many Canadians who believe that they're sitting on all of this great lumber and water are so confident, you know, confident dispelling, like, oh, we're okay. Our banks aren't exposed to subprimes, right? You got this all over. It's a joke, because we don't have manufacturing. We don't have a real economy anymore. We sold that all. We exported it to China. We became a raw materials exporter of cheap goods to other nations, which have the machinery, the labor, that convert those raw materials to something useful and sell it back to us halfway across the world for our dollar stores. It's called cheap shit in China. People live for it. These nations right now are witnessing an utter collapse. There will not be a China coming out of this on top. Canada will not come out of this on top. You have the most recent statistics have pointed out that Mexico has lost, as of what was acknowledged this week, 95% of the 2,400 municipalities are completely bankrupt. Right. Municipality is sort of like a county of the United States. And this is a recent report from the National Conference of Municipalities in Mexico. The Treasury Secretary of Mexico named Agustin Carsten has testified in Congress that $480 billion is the hole that's the deficit that's going to be that's created now, and that's going to necessitate, he says, cuts across the board. So you're going to have state workers, public workers who are already being fired en masse, accelerate their firing. police, firemen, other people necessary to maintain some form of order in a drug-ridden nation who are being let off. Street cleaning and sanitation, that's the first thing to go. And water development projects across the board that currently were in the works are also being scrapped. You have also the remittances, because most of the GDP of Mexico survives. Most of the people survive off the remittances that their loved ones make working in cheap jobs, plucking fruit, or making building houses for the construction bubble, the housing bubble, in North America. And they send their money back to Mexico. Right? This is gone. There's no more housing bubble. No more things being built. So remittances are being shaken down. And this gives a chance for, again, the narcos, who are all financed by George Soros, the same guy who created the Barack Obama presidency, to take over the government. Right. They've already pushed the legalization of possession of every single street drug you can imagine, and that hasn't gone towards... The result hasn't been lowering crime, as most Montrealers believe the legalization of drugs will have. It's gone towards creating an environment where judges, mayors are scared for their lives, carrying around guns. You've had, like, 14 different assassinations of Mexican mayors, 2 senators, and about 10,000 different citizens of Mexico kidnapped and killed in order by these narco traffickers to just take, you know, intimidate the population and get more money. And they're doing this, and also Argentina is the next place where there's a discussion currently to legalize. And it's really just our movement working with the Peronist youths who are allied with Cristina Fernandez Kirchner, who are pushing towards exposing this Soros drive for pro-legalization and pushing for the development projects necessary for them to survive. China, their exports have fallen, have crashed by 23% from last July. Now, the export minister, whose name is Fu Ziying, says there is no end in sight to the world economic crisis, as he knows it. China is freaked out. Russia has witnessed 11% collapse of their GDP. Medvedev has come out saying the raw materials basket is a dead end. So these are all places who they capitulated to the laws of the marketplace, the laws of globalization now for a number of years. China said, you know, they'll allow for a small layer of them to become wealthy at the expense of creating a 900 million Chinese impoverished slave labor composition to provide the cheap labor to the Western world. Russia said, just like Canada, that they would become the raw materials exporters for the world. They wouldn't do industries or anything like that anymore, and that's how they would make the money. And, you know, up until really this last year and a half or so, LaRouche was the only one pointing out that these guys were dead. Even they, those in China and in Russia, had been saying that, no, they're... Russia was famous for saying that, you know, let the U.S. collapse. We've got oil, natural gas, raw materials, booyah. You know? So now you got Medvedev, the president, coming out acknowledging that was a foolish way to think. And they don't want to be destroyed. So these nations are ripe currently for the Four Nations Alliance that LaRouche has put forth, I mentioned briefly. You need to get that competent leadership within them to arrange for a new Bretton Woods monetary conference. Right? You got the smaller nations of Japan, of Indochina, of Korea, and others will join in that type of discussion if they see that if they can be given the confidence that you have the greater powers with the concentration of mines, raw materials, technology can be concentrated, and where you can implement the power of the sovereign nation state as an effective power, not to service the market system, but to protect people and create political economy, to create the policies for a new global financial architecture with long-term treaties, missions to build great projects. Most of them have already been done in terms of all of the preliminary work. You know, most of these projects are cheaper than a day in Iraq, and these can be done very quickly. LaRouche has also pointed out that what this would be based upon would not be just another gold standard. It wouldn't be another Bretton Woods. But this is a global credit system. And up until today, in the world, we've only seen a credit system exist in moments in the United States under the people like under Alexander Hamilton and the First and Second National Bank. We saw it again arise with Abraham Lincoln, who Pascal is going to go through today and develop that idea more. We've seen it again arise with Roosevelt and nearly with JFK. But we've never seen it globally. There's never been a global cooperative of nations that use the same system. It's always coexisted with this British monetarist system. And they can't coexist together anymore. That's done. So we have certain... We can't just say that overnight. We literally need to say, if we want to become sovereign, you want jobs, you want to feed your family, you don't want to have a dark age, then there's these projects that your imagination, your mind can understand. As a human being, you can think about your grandkids, your great-grandkids, or those who are after, even that, and you can think about the effects of a new and improved Kennedy space program to go to Mars in 50 years, a manned mission, which was already the policy of JFK back in 1962. And then you think about cultivating that type of optimism and what would be necessary for a society as a whole to organize themselves behind such a mission towards the future. What types of projects, education would need to be created, sanitation systems need to be created to provide the environment where, or the preconditions, where we can achieve a Mars landing in our lifetimes. And so these are the types of things that LaRouche put forth and our movement is fighting for in five continents. We've got a certain receptivity currently from even the media is being forced to cover LaRouche, which I didn't get to go through very much, but if you go to our website, there's several slugs on this. Political leaders who are allied with LaRouche, like the finance minister of Italy, Giulio Tremonti, so don't think that this is a fringe thing. The finance minister of Italy has not only been an ally and friend of LaRouche, but has actually seems to have organized the prime minister, who was sort of the Rupert Murdoch of Italy now for some time, Berlusconi. Yeah, to the point that Berlusconi came out just this week calling for a new Rooseveltian policy towards creating a new deal for Italy and going through a knowledgeable point-by-point case of how the system would work, how it functions. He had some problems that he afterwards, but you do have a certain response throughout the leadership of the world, and we have to think in these terms, not just in Canada, not just in America, but globally, what is occurring as an active process, and then seeing our role within that process, right? And knowledge, the inclination towards becoming a master of physical economics, or any of the other key concepts necessary that need to be communicated in order to have the survival of the human species assured, will be much more easy to do. You won't just be memorizing shit or, you know, reading depressing slugs about how bad the world is or something, which doesn't give many people a lot of inclination and want to keep on studying. But if you actually are part of a process where you're battling out, figuring out a new and better way to communicate an idea that's not so easy to communicate to the population, to a political leader, you'll find that you'll actually get growth if you commit to that type of idea. So that's why we have these classes. And I guess with that, I'll take a couple of questions if you guys have any, and then leave it to Pascal.
Okay. I have a question.
Okay.
So in the U.S., where this fight is the most crucial, it has to be won if you're anywhere else, is there any sign things going LaRouche's way? Simple as that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we still have the mass strike phenomenon.
Oh, okay. Other than the collapse that...
other than the collapse that
I'm sure
he forecasted?
is smugly content of having been right, but I'm sure he's not pleased to see that this country's going to be dark. No, is there any political sign or a higher level?
Yeah, well, the fact that we're there and we're providing the necessary leadership with millions and millions of documents educating the population about the fact that this isn't... Because here's the thing, right? The mass strike phenomenon, the reason why I could divulge into chaos is because you have Rush Limbaugh. The Rush Limbaugh phenomenon, right? So people are... are petrified, but they only know Ron Paul and his anti-government rants, or, you know, Rush Limbaugh, who just hates everybody. And they can only call Obama a socialist. And they don't have an idea clear in their minds, and so they're loose cannons. They could be manipulated to any effect. We, by providing with, don't get yourself, like, millions of these pamphlets, and our organizing is going on in every single county, practically. I mean, we have a presence everywhere. This is getting people to think in terms of this not just being some socialist thing or some Wall Street thing, necessarily. It's a product of the economic collapse that's already happened. The future of the economic collapse that's already, it already popped. We're just waiting for the effects of that. And this, everything that we see from the health reform bill to the cap and trade and other things, this is all being driven by the future, this future economic collapse that's already occurred. So by getting people to think in these terms and with a solution in their minds, they have the potential that they didn't otherwise have to rise to the occasion and become the necessary leaders. Like that guy who was, brought his little cerebral palsy kid out. I'm sure he never imagined that he was actually going to be leading a riotous mob towards stopping a healthcare reform bill. There you go, So you got an organic formation of people who have to see themselves differently and think as they think about their families, and have to use and respond to LaRouche very quickly, which, I mean, you do have, again, across the board with political leaders and LaRouche's presence having been the world's foremost authority on this collapse. So Berlusconi coming out with this incredible development is, that's one thing. The media also covered him too. The media called up, or BBC of all things, called up to interview LaRouche's spokeswoman, Deborah Freeman, on the evils of the British system. Why is it we're attacking this as being Nazi? And she gave him a full-on briefing saying that the interview was quivering at the end of it. Nancy Spanis was covered in the Washington Post, going through step by step LaRouche's whole recovery program and what the nature of this Nazi Obama policy is. So this is the first time we've seen our name being covered so frequently internationally, and not in the form of a slander. The media does not cover us not as a slander ever. So this is the first time you've got that, and the population's responding. So it's just now, what are we going to do to bring this to the next level?
What about senators and congressmen? Are there senators and congressmen now that are consulting with or following LaRouche's plans, or are they still very silent about following LaRouche?
They won't drop the L name yet.
Okay.
But we know for a fact that we have, we do have people who have been responding and coordinating with our movement within the cabinet. People like around the Hillary Clinton crowd, who have for years, people like Eric Holder and others have, who's the Attorney General. These people have been, using our material in coordination with people like Jeff Steinberg and others, and they do follow and study what LaRouche says very, very seriously.
Is the ratio going up?
Oh, I'm sure. I don't have any direct statistics or anything like that, but you look at people like John Conyers, for example, who put out this health care reform bill that takes, important elements that only LaRouche's bill was putting forth up until months ago. And you have this fight within the administration, both within the Democrats as well, against Obama and these behaviorists. So I don't have any direct statistics as such, but yeah, for sure. LaRouche's the only guy who's been right, and people are responding to that.
Did the newspaper report any manifestation against the representatives or senators during their vacation in their...
Oh, sure. Yeah. Not in Canada so much, but yeah. No, that's why all of these responses by Nancy Pelosi on people attacking this are un-American, in the Financial Times, attacking people who are against Obama's bill. The reason why you have these huge onslaughts is as response to the fact that all of the, I mean, the media has been forced to cover these types of massive just to give you a sense, most of these town hall events, usually in past years, they have maybe like a few dozen people show up. They talk about like that parking light or the parking meters in my neighborhood are dysfunctional, and that's your general event. This year you've got rooms that'll fill a capacity of maybe 300 people, and you've got 10,000 or thousands show up. And they're there for blood.
The one that we saw on the board,
yeah,
was in the hospital or in one of the representative offices?
That was just a town hall event. They rented a town hall like we have in Montreal, and they had an event, and that's usually how it goes.
The one in Detroit, then?
I think so. I thought that's the one with Alan Agri, yeah. Right. That would be Detroit.
There were two in the view.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, if you go online, you can watch many, many of these things. YouTube has a slew of them.